The NFL conducted a draft, so now you will know the new players who will not be playing for your team this upcoming season. The Supreme Court overturned a long-standing precedent. No, not that one. Another one. In ruling that a unanimous verdict is required to convict a person of a crime, and Mackenzie Smith and I unpack the movie Liar Liar. Yes, I know, I get it. Two lawyers talking about Liar Liar might be like Jeffrey Dahmer talking about the advantages of an all-meat diet. I get that. So Mackenzie decided to interview her own kids about Liar Liar, and their responses will... Well, I'm just going to play this one straight. Their responses will give you hope for humanity in the future of mankind. In this week's Debriefing of the Law. Well, welcome to this week's Debriefing of the Law. My guest today, and now she's, this is your third time running here, is going to be Mackenzie Smith. Thank you so much, Mackenzie, for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
And we are doing our movie reviews. We've already done My Cousin Vinny. We did Philadelphia. And now this week, probably one of the greatest lawyer movies ever outside of My Cousin Vinny, Liar Liar. We're going to have a lot of fun with that, especially because we have a treat for you. Mackenzie decided to interview her kids about what they thought about the movie Liar Liar and what they thought about the legal profession in general. And it is a blast. All right, well, let's move over now to our movie review from this last week. And Mackenzie, this is quickly becoming one of the highlights of my week. Yes, my weeks are very boring as I'm stuck here at home. But nonetheless, I love watching these movies and unpacking these movies. And this last week, we watched Liar Liar, which I love this movie. Was this one of your favorite movies even before we watched it this last week?
Yeah, I mean, grew up kind of during the era of Jim Carrey movies, and they were coming out so quickly, like one a year for a while there.
Oh, yeah.
And
are you
a
Jim Carrey
fan?
I
love them all. Yeah, I really do like Jim Carrey. I think he's a great actor. He's obviously like a certain kind of actor, but he's done a couple of dramatic roles as well, which I have been very impressed with. So I just think I get a sense, and I could be totally wrong because you never know about these Hollywood types, but I feel like he's like a genuinely good person.
Right.
And that makes me like him even more.
Well, you mentioned he had this rate of about one per year, and I love Jim Carrey, and I think he's hilarious. But it kind of surprised me when I went back and looked at the different movies that he has produced. The first big one that really put him on the map was Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. That came out in 1994. Hilarious movie. I loved it. Then the next year, actually that same year, he came out with The Mask and Dumb and Dumber. So all three of those movies came out at about the exact same time. And then Batman Forever the next year with Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. That would be the second Ace Ventura. And then The Cable Guy. That's it. Those were the movies that were done before he came out with Liar Liar. So this was kind of early in his career.
Yeah. And I remember, like, I guess back then it seemed like there was more time in between. But yeah, he did a lot in the mid-90s, like right away.
Can you imagine Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber? All three were in the same year. Now, I got to ask you, let's set Liar Liar aside. What was or what is your favorite Jim Carrey movie?
Dumb and Dumber, hands
yes!
down. One of the funniest movies, because there's a handful of movies, like very few, maybe three tops, of which Dumb and Dumber is one. The other two are Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Borat,
okay,
which I happen to have watched for the first time with my father. And when I watch a movie with a comedy with my dad, for whatever reason, when he laughs and he gets going, it gets me going. And it creates like a life. It's like burned in my memory to where every time I see these movies or a clip from any of these movies, like I can't stop laughing because I'm more laughing at his reaction, like, you know, it gets to the point where I'm like, Dad, you're going to have a stroke. Stop. You have to calm down. But yeah, like that slapstick comedy. I mean, Dumb and Dumber is a family classic of my family for sure.
Now I have to see Brett. I have not seen that yet. But if you're telling me it's in the same genre as Dumb and Dumber, I've got to see, because that is one of my favorite movies of all time. That is just hilarious. And the final scene, yeah, that is classic. That is a classic scene from, you know which one I'm talking about?
I'm trying to think. It's been so long since I saw it. I know when all the scenes, but which one's the last one?
There's a busload of women on some kind of sun tanning lotion convention. They want these two guys to join them so they can put on the suntan lotion, and they had to stop the bus and say, no, you're going the wrong direction. That entire scene just cracks me up.
Yeah, it's so great. I mean, it's such a great movie.
Well, the
shout out to Jeff Daniels too. He's great in it. They're both great.
Oh, he was great. Well, you did something very interesting this last week. You watched this movie, Liar Liar, with your kids, and you decided to interview them as to what they thought about the movie, and then also what they thought about lawyers in general, and then your role as a lawyer. Mackenzie, what led you to do that?
You know, we've been spending a lot of time together lately, and, you know, I told them I was watching this movie, we watched it together, and just some of their comments are so hilarious. Like, while the movie is going on, it's just so funny. It makes it more funny to me, and I just figured, like, you know, it's fun to get their feedback and to kind of see things from a kid's perspective, because what kids pick up on and what we pick up on are like completely different things.
Oh, I love it. Yes. To see the perspective of the kid. It is hilarious. And so you decided to interview them via the podcast to get their responses. And so let's go ahead and play that now.
All right. So we watched Liar Liar last night, and I think we all agree it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to ask you guys some questions to get your input on the legal technicalities of this movie. So first question, do you guys think that Fletcher is a good lawyer?
No.
I hear a no and a yes. Mateo, you said no. Why don't you think he's a good lawyer?
Because he goes... during court, he goes to the bathroom and beats himself up and goes to jail almost, like, twice in the movie.
Oh, yeah. And, Luke, why do you think he's a good lawyer?
Well, because he couldn't say a lie, so it was a good idea to beat himself up. So then, it would, like, because that's not really telling a lie, but he made the police tell a lie.
So he was, like, creative.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think a good lawyer should be creative?
Yes.
Yeah. What about you, Abby?
I think it's both. I think he's good because even though he couldn't lie, he thought of a good way to be able to tell the truth and still win and know, because he lies a lot.
Do you think
most of the time?
Do you think lawyers lie?
Sometimes, but yeah. Just to, like, win the case, but other times, no.
Yeah, what about you, Luke?
I think they lie sometimes, but not, like, every time.
Yeah, so what does a lawyer do? What do you guys, like, what was your definition of, like, what a lawyer does? Mateo?
You're a lawyer.
Yeah.
They go to court and try to win the case and put the bad guy to jail.
Yeah. And what do you, anyone have anything to add? Abby?
So somebody does something illegal, or they are thought to do, they are a suspect and they are thought that they did something illegal, and then they get a lawyer to help them say that they did not commit the crime and that they don't have to go to jail.
They're basically detectives.
Yeah, they do, like, a lot of investigating work.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about judges? What makes a good judge?
Who?
What, yeah?
Knowing when to slam that really big hammer and when not to.
crucial.
And not to be, like, cranky at night, like the judge in Liar Liar.
Yeah, he was pretty cranky.
He said he was cranky.
Yeah.
I think a judge, wait, what was the question?
What makes a good judge?
Oh, they have to look really good in those black robes, and
also crucial.
And they have to be able to be like kind of like a lie detector.
Yeah, like they have to be able to tell when someone's telling the truth or lying, because otherwise, how would they know who to believe if two witnesses are saying different things? What about you, Tay?
I think a good judge is somebody who's nice but can tell who's lying. And, like doesn't get mad when somebody interrupts him.
Is it kind of like a parent? I mean, what you're describing kind of sounds like a parent. Yeah. Like, they have to give consequences.
A courthouse.
Yeah, like, you give consequences, but you're going to do it in, like, a
nice way.
Yeah, like a neutral way, not like an angry way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really important of a judge. But also slamming the giant hammer thing.
Like, giant gavel.
Yeah.
You need the giant hammer thing.
You gotta have the giant hammer. Let's see. Okay, what was the funniest scene of this movie?
everyone already knows it.
All right, the and wait, one. Before you go any further, you can't say any bad words
okay.
on a podcast, okay? All right, go ahead.
So, part in the elevator, of course.
Agreed?
Yes, agreed.
I think that it's the part in the elevator, and the part where he, like, goes to work when he first, like, knows that he can't lie, and he, like, is mean to all those people. It's really funny.
Where he says, like, what's up? Your cholesterol!
Yeah.
You're not important enough to remember.
That's my favorite one. You're not important enough to remember. I don't know why it's so mean, but it's, like, just hilarious when he says that.
And when he wrote all over himself trying to write this pen is red, but it was blue.
Yeah. So, if you guys remember at the end, like, you know, only one person ends up going to jail in this movie, and it wasn't, like, you understand what the court case was about, right? Like, mm-hmm. It was, what was it about?
There was this lady named Mrs. Cole, and, it was, like, her and her husband, her husband was, like, the bad guy or something.
And they were, like, doing something.
Yeah.
Well, they were getting divorced, right?
Yeah.
And she was trying to get more...
Money. Even though she was already gonna win, like...
Yeah, and she wasn't old enough, and she lied about her age, and...
Yeah.
Right. That's why Fletcher ends up winning the case, right? Because he was creative, like you said before. He found a creative argument using the truth and ended up winning. Mm-hmm. But nobody in that kind of case, it's called a civil case, so no one actually goes to jail. But Fletcher did go to jail, right? Why do you guys think he went to jail, Abby?
He was held in contempt.
Yes! What does that mean?
It means when the lawyer is kind of, like, acting out and, like, being, like, disobeying the judge, so they have to hold them in contempt, which is basically, like, jail. And then you have to, like, the secretary, I think her name's Rita? Or wait, no. Yeah, Rita? Wait, yeah. Yeah, her name's Rita. And, yes.
That was Miranda.
And somebody has to give you, like, give the, like, jail, the contempt people, like, $1,000 to bail you out.
Do you think that's a good rule?
Well, if the lawyer's being really... Wait, which rule?
The rule that the judge can put someone in jail for contempt?
Yes. So, most of the time. Because, I mean, if the lawyer's being mean to the judge in their own court, where they want to be, like, obeyed, then, you know, they should be able to punish them for, like Fletcher, like... kind of told him that this decision he was making was wrong, and that's, like, an offense.
Yeah.
I feel like.
So do you think Fletcher was a better lawyer when he was a liar or when he was an honest lawyer?
When he was a liar.
How come? Why do you?
Because he didn't go to the bathroom and beat himself up.
Okay.
And he didn't get held in contempt.
That's true.
I think a liar, but I don't really... No, because he wasn't, like, really used to always telling the truth, so it was, like, a first time. for him. So I thank Liar because he does it every case.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also have another funniest part.
What's your other funniest part?
At the very end when he's like, good news, they can't take me right to jail because both my legs are broken.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. Get slingshotted.
So, you guys know that I go to court sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Do you think I lie?
Yes.
Teo! No,
yes.
No, my flesh and blood!
No, I think you told me once. He said even if the case is wrong, you never lie, you said.
Well, I did. I'm impressed with myself. Why would I say that?
Because you don't want to go to jail.
Yeah, I definitely, true, don't want to go to jail, but maybe there's, like, an even more important reason.
So, you don't get fired.
So.
Also true, don't want to get fired.
Can you go to jail if you lie?
If they find out? Maybe.
You, well, if you're under oath, so you know when people go into court and they say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Uh-huh.
So if you lie after doing that, it's called perjury, and you can theoretically go to jail for that.
Yeah, yeah, because don't you have your hand on the Bible?
You do have your hand on the Bible or another book of your choice.
I saw the person had his hand up like this.
Yeah, so usually you do.
His underhand on the Bible?
Yeah, yeah, that's what they usually do. But, like, when Fletcher had to tell the truth and he came up with a creative argument, he won the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, but what if she hadn't been 18? I mean, what if she had been 18? What if the her driver's license or her birth certificate showed that she actually could enter into the contract, and with the truth, he would have lost the case? Would it be better to lie just to win and get her a bunch of money that shouldn't really be hers? Or would it be better to tell the truth and lose and have to be the loser in the case?
Tell the truth and lose?
Yeah, tell the truth because, like, then the other person would go to jail because she deserves it. Something like that.
Why do you think, Tay?
Because it's not even her $9 million that she's getting.
And would you still, you think you'd be able to hold your head high as a lawyer?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Cool. That's a lot of money. If
you you already won $3 million, so.
No, wasn't it $11
million? No, well, she won $11 million because if she was 18 and lost the case.
Yeah.
I think, like, if you knew that you were going to lose, you should just settle because she was going to win the $3 million, and that's, like, enough to buy $1 billion. Cars and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you think it's sad that, like, husband and wife were going to court to sue each other for money?
Yeah. And also I feel really bad for the kids because they can't see their dad. Yeah,
so that, bad for the kids.
Was, yeah.
She's rude. She was, like, spanking them with a spatula.
I think it made Fletcher realize, like, how much he loved his son and was thankful that he wasn't in that kind of situation, right? Yeah.
I thought you meant the other Fletcher.
All right, any parting thoughts about Liar Liar?
If the lawyer lies, do they go to jail?
So if the lawyer lies, and they're not under oath, right, because they're not a witness,
yeah.
So you wouldn't be committing perjury, but we have what are called ethical rules that we have to abide by as lawyers. So when you pass the bar exam and you get your law license, you're bound by these rules, and definitely one of them is called candor toward the tribunal, which means you can't lie to a court. You shouldn't lie anyway, no matter what, but, like, you absolutely, under no circumstances, can you lie to the court. So it's like a teacher. Like, if the judge says, like, Mackenzie, did you do your homework, and I didn't do it, and I didn't prepare for court, I have to say, no, I didn't, Your Honor, and it's really embarrassing. But it's better to be embarrassed than to lie, because you can get your law license revoked for that, too.
Yeah, and that's, like, then you won't have a job.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, that's just a waste of 4 years of law school.
3 years, but yeah.
Well,
and,
whatever.
You know, a decade of a career. Plus, we'd be living under a bridge, you know,
yeah,
eating ramen.
Well, we still would have dad paying, but then you'd get a job. But we won't be able to pay as many taxes.
All right, so Jim Carrey, best comedic actor of all time or top three? What do you guys think? Best.
He's in the top three, right with, like, Tom Hanks. Like, they're, like, together.
Best.
Tom Hanks
is
a very good, funny person.
Yeah.
He's definitely the best.
Yeah, but Jim Carrey's very much. Jim Carrey. not Tim Carrey. Very much up there.
All right, guys. Thanks for the interview. Hopefully, we'll be able to do this again sometime.
Woo, yeah.
All right. Bye.
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 So, Mackenzie, that was pure comedy gold. I'm telling you, I love listening to your kids. I now think that you have been misleading me as to the amount of fun you've been having with these stay-at-home orders. That is a riot. And so, let me ask you about some of the questions you asked, because some of these questions you asked are amazing, especially your kids' insight to them. So when you asked your kids, do you think lawyers lie? Were you surprised by their response?
I mean, so yeah, so two of the kids, Luke and Abby, are my stepkids, no biological relation, and they're so, you know, have so much faith in me and like believe right. in me. And then my own son goes, oh yeah, you know, lawyers lie, you lie. Like, it's like, come on, man, like, just throw your mom right under the bus there. But I think, you know, for kids, they don't really, they've never been inside a courtroom that's, you know, in real life. Like, what they see is from TV and movies. And what do you see on TV and movies? Like, you see lawyers lying. And so that's really how they, is shaping their view of what they think lawyers do.
Oh, I know. And then when you ask them, what do you think judges do? And I believe one of your children said, they slam a heavy hammer.
You gotta have the giant hammer.
Apparently, that's what judges do. They slam a giant hammer. And so again, the perspective from kids as compared to adults is hilarious, especially when it came to what was their funny part in the movie. Because here's where I find that I question sometimes my level of humor. Do you ever question your level of humor?
Never. I mean, I'm one of the funniest people I know.
Well, when I find out that your kid's funniest moment is also my funniest moment during the movie, I got to question where my sense of humor actually is. But yeah, that scene when he is walking through the office and he cannot tell a lie, that was just great comedy.
Yeah, it is. And it's so, like, you know, it's funny because when I started talking to them about this movie, it became quickly apparent to me that they really had no idea what the lawsuit was really about, no idea what the difference between a civil case and a criminal case, which I will pause and say, I think there's like a large proportion of just society in general that doesn't know the difference between, I mean, you'd be surprised right. how many oh, yeah. adults ask me like, oh, so did your client get put in jail? And I'm like, wait, no, that's not what I do. Like, if my client's going to jail, something went very awry.
Right, that's a bad day in court.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. But they also have such a good sense of just human beings and the way people work. Like, they might not know what the legal formalities of a case are or civil versus criminal, but they do know, like, when they said, you know, if he really knew that she had been over 18, she could legally enter into the contract. It wouldn't have been fair because she was getting $3 million anyway, and she right. wasn't really entitled to that money. It's like, okay, like, I'm impressed. That's great. Yeah. So, well, you know, it just goes to show you people know the law at the end of the day, right, is about right and wrong. And people know right and wrong. Like, you can put any words to it you want. You can make it sound fancy and legal. But at the end of the day, it really is that simple. It really is. So, and this movie is just such a hilarious and, you know, funny way of exemplifying that.
It is. I do think the American public, probably the most part of their, the vast majority of their legal knowledge does come from movies. That probably should scare us. But I do think that, Mackenzie, you should get Teacher of the Year Award because you are actually giving them real education. I'm watching a movie like Liar Liar with your kids and then unpacking how that actually is a real or a wrong reflection of the legal profession. That is great education. Well, let's start with the opening scene and then move from there. The opening scene, I think, is somewhat of a cliche, but it is interesting that I remember the son was in school. And the teacher asked them what their parents did, and he said, my dad's a liar. Kind of caught the teacher a little bit off guard.
Yeah, and doesn't she say, oh, you mean lawyer? And he says liar, and it sets up the whole thing. But yeah, well, I mean, we've heard it a million times, right? Amongst any number of other lawyer jokes.
Yeah, lawyer, why do they sound so similar? Is there any kind of, you know, common root words there that apply to both? I don't know, but I do this man on the street interviews, and if you attended my class, you might have seen some of them. And I'll ask the public, I'll say, do you think lawyers should lie for their client? And the response I get from the public is just, it fascinates me how half of them will say, well, yeah, that's what a lawyer should do. A lawyer should lie on behalf of the client, which kind of leads me to the next scene in the movie. The next scene is where there's a female partner was trying to get a lawyer to lie. He said he wouldn't do it. And so she said, well, we should let the courts decide what is true. And she said that she would have to get someone else that would lie and to take on that case. And that leads to this client interview. Do you remember the part of the movie where Jim Carrey is with that older female partner and they're meeting with a client and they're talking about the client's case? Do you remember that?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so,
just for the general public, this is not how this should go.
Right. So what she does is he hands her a script of what she should say at trial. She reads it and then says, well, the only problem is it's not true. Is that a problem? Yeah. But here's what I want to focus on for our listeners. Because is that real life stuff?
Oh, no. I mean, I hope not. not in my law practice, no.
But here's the deal. I wonder if the clients or if the public actually knows this, that lawyers don't lie for their clients. Because, again, these clients, they watch movies. They think lawyers lie. And so at least I have had these awkward conversations with my clients as we're preparing, let's just say, for a deposition. And you can kind of tell we're going over their testimony, and they're not really saying this, but what they are trying to ask me is, what should my answer be? What should I say here? Is this where we lie? At what point do we actually script out what our defense is going to be? Do you think the public has that perception of lawyers?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people do, unfortunately, right? Because, you know, we don't like to be a maligned profession. I mean, it does happen. Like, you know, obviously it happens. Hopefully not to that level. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm one of those people where I feel like I just want to know the good, the bad, and the ugly right up front. Right. And then what I strive to be good at, what lawyers should strive to be good at is, you know, playing the cards you're dealt, like Jim Carrey ultimately does in this movie, right, and coming up with the best argument you can to zealously represent your client, right? Like, that's what we're supposed to do. That's what lawyers do. But yeah, I think people think that we're just like, you know, say, and it just begs the question, like, what do you guys think about our justice system? Like, how would this ever work if everyone's just lying? Right, you know, right, how right. do we even, how does justice ever get served? So I don't know. Must so be interesting to think that way.
Right, so the vast majority of lawyers, we don't lie. That is not how this works. As Mackenzie, as you said, we just want to know from the clients, just tell us the good, the bad, and the ugly, and then we will deal with it. That's why we get paid the big bucks. We know how to think creatively. We'll research the law, and if you have a really bad case, we're going to move for settlement really quickly here. But nonetheless, we just want to know. Now, that's not always the case. In criminal cases, lawyers might not want to know everything, because if the client actually did it, if they committed the crime and they tell the lawyer that's what they did, sometimes their lawyers, our hands are somewhat handcuffed, because now you can't pursue certain legal theories in court that you know that are not accurate. And so in criminal, it's a little bit different, because the prosecution has the burden of proving the case. And so really a lawyer's job there might be more of making the prosecution prove their case, and the lawyer might not want to know everything. Any thoughts?
Yeah, so I have been a prosecutor. I've never been a criminal defense attorney. So I don't know. I'm just so curious, just having been on the other side, as to how those conversations go. Because obviously as a prosecutor, it's the opposite, right? Like you have to disclose everything, and you have to turn over everything, and it's very, or should be very, very transparent. You know, and defense-wise, it's very different. But, you know, I'm a believer in the system, and I totally have, after having been on the other side, have a lot of respect for what criminal defense attorneys do. It's a, not an easy job, and I've seen some of the best lawyering I've ever seen from criminal defense attorneys. So there are really, really good ones out there, if anyone ever needs.
I'll give you a call if I ever get in trouble. But you're right. As for me, if I were a criminal lawyer, and I'm not, I would want to not know everything. I would basically just want to say, let me look at the facts. Let me look at the prosecution's case. And then I'm going to try to blow holes in it. I'm going to hold the prosecutor's feet to the fire and make the prosecutor prove the case. And I don't really want to know whether or not you did it or didn't do it. That's just my take. Some other lawyers might have a slightly different take. That's not my approach when it comes to civil cases. When it comes to civil cases, I want to know everything because, you know what? We can deal with it somehow. And if it's really bad and you really screwed up, well, then we're going to try to settle this case because you shouldn't have done what you did. But nonetheless, that's kind of my approach when it comes to criminal versus civil cases. What about this next scene here? Do you remember the scene where the cop pulled him over when he was speeding? Do you remember that scene?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a classic scene. And so the cop asked him, do you know why I pulled you over? Now, what should be your response to that?
No.
Hey, well, first, let me ask you, have you ever been pulled over?
Yeah, but I'm like the worst. My story is horrible because I have verbal diarrhea in these kind of situations. So I actually was pulled over once. I had just gone back to work from maternity leave with my older son, and I was just rushing. I had just gotten off the train, and then I had about a 5-minute drive home, and I was rushing because I missed the baby, and I was newly back to work, and boy, did I go right through a red light. And, you know, I saw it turning yellow, and I was like, I can make it. And a police officer pulled out and pulled me over. Yeah. And he came to the window of my car very respectfully, ma'am, do you know why I pulled you over? And my response was it the speeding or was it the red light I just blew back there?
Was it the speeding or the red light?
I was just getting out my checkbook, like, who should I make this out to? Because this is only going to go one way. So
what did
I
paid
the ticket. I think he laughed.
Okay.
He just said yes. And he was very nice, gave me like the minimum fine. I paid it, no harm, no foul.
Okay.
And we moved on with life.
My response now usually is, officer, why don't you tell me why you pulled me over? I'm not going to offer up what violation, you know, it might have been, because it might be more than one. But I think cops ask you that question because they just want, if you'll make an admission as to guilt, that's something they can record. If you said, yes, I was going 12 miles over the speed limit, then that's an admission they actually can use if you try to fight the case a little bit later.
Absolutely.
All right. What was one of your favorite scenes in the movie?
Let me think. I mean, I think, you know, there's a little bit of a heart-wrenching part of the movie because, like, the son is so cute and he's so sad about his dad, and, you know, it's just that part kind of like pulls on my heartstrings. But I think the courtroom scenes in this movie, like, you know, it's so preposterous and so ridiculous. And Jim Carrey's like screaming the whole time. Like he's having like a problem controlling the volume of his voice. Like every question is just like, you know, screaming and gesticulating and going back and forth. But it's pretty great how the trial actually goes and how he does realize that he's on the right side of the law. He doesn't need to lie to win this case. And then he wins and feels, you know, it should be like this highlight of his career, this great moment. And then he realizes, like, you know, he didn't necessarily do the right thing, or he didn't have to feel good about it just because he won, I guess is a better way to say it. But yeah, the whole trial is great. And especially at the very, very end of the movie, when they show the outtakes from the trial and you get to see how them redoing it a bunch of times, I think is hilarious. And the judge, I think the judge was so great in this movie. He like kept a straight face the whole time, and he's actually like pretty dead on to how a lot of judges act. Like, it's pretty realistic.
Right, right. Yeah, you're gonna hold that person in contempt when they're gonna question the court's judgment. You don't want to mess with judges. They actually do have contempt power. That's one of the real powers that a judge has. They can throw you in jail if you are acting unruly in court, and so you don't want to do that. You can spend your time in the slammer. One of my favorite scenes, you mentioned the court scenes. I love the scene where he objected and the court asked him why. He says, well, because it's devastating to my case. And so yeah. It's like, well, okay, that's really honest. It's not going to get you the objection or sustained, but nonetheless, that is a pretty honest objection.
We've all been there. We've all had that thought for sure. Right.
Object. Why? Because I really don't like this with the line of questioning. I'm trying to interrupt this line of questioning. Please just stop. That's really what you're trying to say. But yeah, my favorite scene. I have so many different favorite scenes from this movie, but one of them definitely is when he needs to get a continuance. And so he decides to go back to the bathroom to beat himself up. So then he comes back in court. He's all beat up. And the courtroom is aghast as to what happened to him. And so the judge asks him about that, and he cannot lie about what happened. Did you like that scene?
I think the bathroom scene is just so classic Jim Carrey. He's such a great physical comic. And, you know, you think, like, what was shooting this scene like? Like, how many times did he have to do this? And, like, how awful was that? I mean, he really earned his keep on this movie, right? Like, he definitely worked hard. Not something I would ever think to do. But yeah, I guess, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And it is a great scene. I mean, it's just a great physical comedy. And then, you know, the aftermath of it and everything, I think it's pretty, my kids were laughing nonstop for sure.
Oh, that was a great scene. If I were Jim Carrey, I'd want to make sure that the toilet seat lid actually was brand new and they just didn't clean it up before that scene. But yeah, during one part of that scene, he puts his head between the toilet seat lid and just smacks it down. So then he goes back into court and he has no idea what to do, right? He's trying to get a continuance here. And so the judge says, look, we're going to have to continue this matter. And you're thinking, okay, finally, Jim Carrey has gotten off the hook here. There's going to be a continuance. But then the judge adds, unless you think you can go on, and he likes, yes, I can. And so then he had to continue with the case. What did you think about the actual legal issue in Liar Liar? Was it a real legal issue?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. I think you can't enter into a contract. I mean, I don't know specifically to the marital law issue, but as far as I'm aware, like a prenup is a contract. Nothing more, nothing less. So, yeah, it's real.
Generally speaking, you cannot enter into a contract if you are under the age of 18. There are some exceptions. I'm not sure a marital contract would fit into that exception. And so that would be a basis to hold a contract void. And so that is what they did here. He won the case and got, what, $11 million for his client. And as you mentioned, sometimes as lawyers, you win the case. And is that a good thing that you won the case? And he had his second guesses. He was second guessing himself as to whether I should have even been involved with this case because now it's going to really harm these kids. Do you think that's real life stuff? Do lawyers actually face that dilemma?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a real life issue as well. I mean, it's something that, you know, when you become a lawyer, you believe in justice. Presumably you believe in right and wrong. And the vast majority of people, I think, do go into it for good reasons because they truly want to help people. And, you know, there are situations where something like that happens. And I think, you know, it's not, hopefully you don't have a client who's that odious, like as this woman was in the movie. Like you would hope to have that conversation beforehand and kind of act as, you know, a counselor as well and kind of, you know, gently nudge. But it's true. I mean, he did the right thing in terms of being a lawyer at the end. Like when your client directs you, like, no, I am contesting custody. Like you can't say like, no, she's not. We're not doing this. Like he did what he had to do. But for sure, you definitely have those existential moments of you know, what am I doing here? And should the law, like, I feel like in my experience more often it's, you know, should the law really be this way? And why is it this way?
Right.
You know, more than am I personally doing the right thing, but why is our system set up this way? And you do, it does, you know, give you some pause sometimes.
I got to tell you that that is why I do what I do, because I don't think I could be a family lawyer. And I do know family lawyers are needed. Thank God that there are some good family lawyers out there, because that is an area of law that you need them. But man, I couldn't stomach it. I mean, I just don't have the stomach for that kind of litigation. And so same with criminal law. I mean, I couldn't think of prosecuting an innocent person or defending a guilty person. And so because of that, yeah, I do civil law. To me, it's much easier to do civil law, constitutional litigation. That's something I can stomach. Yeah, in that particular situation, I mean, he did his job. He did it right. And at the end of the day, he is all bummed and depressed. So let me just get your final thoughts here. We're trying to come up with our list of movies that we can put into our Hollywood Lawyer Hall of Fame. I'm going to, you know, do some special classes here just on the best legal movies of all time. What do you think? Does this belong in the hall?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, first of all, I have to say yes, because I have to do right by my kids, and they just like loved watching this movie so much. So I know, you know, when it comes to 12 Angry Men or Michael Clayton, they're not going to watch with me. So I have to do right by them. And I strenuously agree that this movie should be in the Hall of Fame.
Because let's look at it. It was a good movie, right? Can we at least agree this was one of Jim Carrey's classics? This was a good movie. It was entertaining. There were several laugh out loud moments where you are just dying laughing. I mean, what is that saying? LMAOF, something like that. I'm probably butchering it, but laughing out loud, whatever. This movie has it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I think we mentioned it earlier, but the scene when he is walking back through the hallway there on his way to the office where he cannot lie, and that's when he's realizing he cannot lie. That is probably one of the funnier moments of any movie or TV show I have ever seen. It is just so hilarious. I think your kids pointed out, I don't even know your name. You're not important enough for me to remember your name. That is just pure comedy gold. So it gets high marks for comedy, for being watchable, right? Would you not agree with that? All right.
I definitely agree with that.
Jim Carrey does a really good job. I found out that the person who directed this movie, his name was Tom Shadyac. I might not be pronouncing that correctly, as Shadyac. He produced this movie. He directed this movie. He also directed two other movies with Jim Carrey. That would be Ace Ventura and then the Bruce Almighty movie. And so I'm thinking these two guys should have hooked up a lot more often, because those are three of my favorite movies of all time. But nonetheless, I thought it was just a really well done movie. Jim Carrey was nominated for a Golden Globe Award for Best Actor in a Comedy. So you have that going as well. And what about the legal issues? Did it depict the legal profession in some kind of meaningful, accurate way beyond just simply, hey, I want to get a laugh?
So the actual legal issue about the contract being void was pretty surprisingly spot on. So that you have to give some points for. The client interview and client management issues, not so good. And you hope that doesn't happen too often in real life. You know.
So there was some things that they were taking a little bit extra license with, trying to be creative to get a laugh. Probably is not going to happen in the real legal world. But since it is comedy, it's trying to, I think, underscore a real point, which is sometimes clients, they don't know whether or not they can tell the truth. So that controversy, that dilemma, I thought was a real dilemma that a lot of lawyers face. So, hey, I'm going to give it some kudos there as well. I'm going to agree with you. Definitely, this goes into our Hall of Fame of one of the best legal movies ever. I think I should even be able to play this movie in one of my classes. So we'll all come together for my CLA class to get some legal training. All hit play, sit down, we'll watch it. we should all get our 2 hours of credit because it has a lot of great teaching points for legal ethics. All right, Mackenzie, I want to give you the ability to give your final thoughts here before we close up.
Yeah, so thumbs up. Don't be a liar. And
don't be a liar.
when you have an opportunity to watch a movie like this with your kids, which hopefully a lot of people are doing, you know, ask them these questions because sometimes you can get some insights that, you know, you might not even think of. And I definitely walked away from the conversation feeling so great about who my kids are as people. They may be not feeling so great about who I am as a lawyer, but you know, that's okay. they have their whole lives to restore their faith in me. So I give it 2 thumbs up. I think it should be in the Hall of Fame and, you know, I'm happy with my decision.
All right. And also let me just say, listeners, the answer is no. If you want to know from your lawyer if you can lie, the answer is no. That is not how the actual practice of law works. So thank you so much for listening this week and come back next week as we go over a different movie. We have yet to come up with that movie. Any thoughts on Mackenzie as we're sitting here, or should we just talk about that off air?
I think we got to do a drama.
A drama. All right.
Yes.
There are several good dramas.
Yeah.
We got The Firm, you got Pelican Brief, you got ones I can't even think of right now. Is there a drama?
Pelican Brief. I love Pelican Brief.
You like the Pelican Brief?
I do.
All right, let's do it. Pelican Brief will be our movie for next week. Watch it on your own, and then we're going to come back next week and unpack it from a legal perspective. How is the homeschooling going?
So I've learned that I'm not a teacher. I'm not a teacher, especially like a fourth grade teacher. It's tough, man. Like, it's not something that comes naturally to me or, you know, a lot of people that I talk to. I feel like it's, you know, there's been a learning curve. We are getting better. The kids have been very good about, you know, being on a schedule and doing their work and not going crazy all day. But it's, you know, it's starting to wear on everyone. I think it seems like the past month has lasted, you know, a year or two. I'm ready for it to be over, as is everyone I know.
So I assume you've seen this joke going around that it says, you know, this is the time of year we normally find out who our kids' teachers will be next year. Hopefully it won't be me. This is kind of like a temporary thing. I know sometimes our schedules get crazy. My son's texting me last night at 2 a.m. So I have no idea what their schedule is. I am not up at 2 a.m. Do you try to keep some kind of semblance of a schedule?
We do. We try to, you know, keep a normal schedule. We actually, during the week, have kept normal bedtimes, which were so uncool. And we're like the worst parents in the world, according to our kids. But,
down in popularity.
Yeah, exactly.
Your approval ratings are dipping because I know the next door neighbor, they're staying up until 11.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's so hard to, you know, tell them they have to go to bed when we know that they don't have anything going on until 10 o'clock the next morning. But at the same time, like, think long term, like, this is going to be so hard when it's over for everyone to get back in a schedule, back in a routine, to have to get up and get dressed in the morning. So I feel like the more normal we can keep it, the better. And that's what we're trying to stick with. But we also have a baby who goes to sleep early, so they kind of have to be quiet anyway.
Oh, I thought you were going to go a different direction. You have a baby, so there is no sleep no matter what. So it doesn't really matter because the baby sleeps when the baby sleeps, and you're not going to tell the baby anything else other than that. But, I thought you were going to say the bigger picture is, mommy and daddy, we want to go to bed. We are tired. We're not going to stay up until your bedtime. I just can't do it physically. There's a kind of a running joke around our household that I'll fall asleep around 9 and go to bed around 11 because, yeah, right there in front of the TV set, I'm tired. I can't stay awake.
No, that's totally me. I'm a morning person, and I'm completely useless after like 7 p.m.
So have you gotten out of the house yet? Because yesterday I got out of the house and played some tennis with my son. Now, I assume that you guys are in some kind of government-issued lockdown there in Philadelphia.
Yes, we are. Yeah. And it looks like it's going to go for several more weeks. So you're allowed to go out of the house. It's not, you know, it's not a formal quarantine or anything like that. So we do go to the park to take walks. I've been on several hikes with the baby, but you know, there's other than that, with other than the grocery store, there's really not anywhere to go.
Well, this is my experience. I ventured out this week to go play tennis with my son. I went to the tennis courts. There are 8 tennis courts there, Mackenzie. All right, 8. We couldn't play tennis. They were all full.
Oh,
every
yeah.
single one. So we went to another tennis court, and there were 8 there as well. 0 availability. They were all full as well. We went to 20 tennis courts that day, could not find a single opening. Finally, we found one, I think about the 4th tennis park we went to. And during this process, we drove by Lowe's. Let me tell you, it was Black Friday. I mean, the parking lot was full. Everyone was there shopping, apparently spending their stimulus check. So I guess we're in a lockdown. I just don't have any idea what that means in real life.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, like the grocery stores around us are mob scenes. The parks are mob scenes. I mean, there's people everywhere. There's nowhere else to go. It's basically forcing everyone into smaller areas in a smaller period of time. And it's just, you know, I mean, that's the situation. And I think there are some stores that are handling it better than others. Like there's one big grocery store near us that, you know, they've been like clockwork and everything down to a science. And it's pretty, it's not a pleasant experience, but it's about as, you know, stress-free as you're going to get right now. And then there's another grocery store that I was at the other day where their solution was to have one register open and then have everyone stand in one line to
wow.
use this register. And it was like a mosh pit in the frozen foods aisle. I mean, you couldn't,
wow.
it was wall-to-wall people. And somebody said, you know, just so you guys know, this isn't working. This is
right,
not what
right.
you're supposed to be doing. So, you know, it's a learning curve for everyone, I guess.
Oh, if you listen to the media, they say, hey, once we stop the stay-at-home order and people go back to real life, you're going to see the numbers spike, to which my response has been, have you been outside? Because
yeah,
if
yeah.
it hasn't spiked already, I'm telling you, people are out there, they are going around. And so, well, nonetheless, it will be fascinating to see you know, in the next couple of weeks, next month, how this plays out. But Mackenzie, this last week, I finally felt like there was some sense of normalcy coming back to my life. We had sports again. Oh, it was so wonderful. Did you experience that?
I mean, so my 2 sons, my son and my stepson, are so passionately into, well, really all Philadelphia sports teams now, but
oh,
it
you're
started
huge.
Yeah, they are. So it started with the Eagles. They're very into football. They both want to be not only do they want to be in the NFL, they're like convinced that they are both going to be first round draft picks at age 22 right out of college. So this is what I said, just remember to send money home. Like, remember who got you here, who believed in your dreams.
I would like to buy my mother her own house now with my first paycheck. That's what you want to hear.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, it's been tough for them.
And this week we had the NFL draft, and it felt like it was real sports again. I actually watched it. I talked to my neighbors. They actually had a big watch party. Now, they were all related. They were family members, but they had a big old watch party, a fantasy draft scenario. They even bet real money on the draft. I'm telling you, if you're putting money down, we have sports again. So at least I'm feeling pretty good about life. And my Chiefs, I thought we had a great pick with our first draft selection. We took Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a running back out of LSU who's 5'7", 207 pounds. And he's going to be a monster. He's going to be a monster load. He's able to catch the ball out of the backfield. And since the Kansas City Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball, we are going to be even more unstoppable next year. But how did your family take to the draft? Were they excited?
Well, first of all, you guys have a lot to live up to, okay? I'm a huge Andy Reid fan. He did a
yes.
lot for the Eagles. He did a lot for our city, so always going to root for Andy. But, you know, you guys have some high expectations this year, so we'll see what happens. No,
it's
in
a
my
Super Bowl
house,
or bust.
Yeah, right? I honestly, like, that part of my brain that's like reserved for sports knowledge and knowledge about players and their stats and all this. I mean, honestly, at this point in my life, I just fill it with like reality TV. So I don't follow, like, I don't have space in my brain for that level of dedication. But I will say, like, what happened in our house is the kids really wanted to watch it. It doesn't start. We're on the East Coast, so everything's Eastern time. It didn't start until after their bedtime, and it was technically a school night. And so I'm saying, you know, we're trying to stick to our schedules. We're trying to keep a routine. And I caved and I let them watch it live because I yes. didn't have the heart to say, no, you can't stay up and watch this. So, you know, from
your
my
approval
room,
ratings have just gone up.
Yeah. I was trying to finish my book that I'm reading and all I can hear is like the screaming and the excitement from the other room. So in retrospect, I am happy that they got to enjoy it. It was nice to hear that livelihood in the house again. We haven't had that in so long. So I'm not complaining. Like, I'm all for it.
Now, let me tell you a true story that happened last week. And I just want you to give me your honest opinion about how pathetic this is. I am a huge Nebraska Cornhusker fan. And every year I try to go up to the Nebraska spring game. Do you know what the spring game is in football, college football?
No.
Okay. It's where a university will play itself. It is a scrimmage. It's not a game against anyone else. It is the Reds versus the Whites there in Nebraska. Every university has something similar to that. Well, I go to the one in Nebraska, and it's a sellout. Usually, they'll have about 80,000 to 90,000 fans there. I drive 3 hours there and 3 hours back just to attend the spring game. And my wife says, Joel, it's a scrimmage. Well, nonetheless, we love football, right? This is springtime. Guys, spring football. They decided last week to do a spring game. Did you hear about this?
No.
All right, here's what they did. I kid you not. They had the real announcers there. The real announcers. So the ones who normally announce the football game, they were there. Tom Osborne, our legendary coach who won 3 national championships for Nebraska, he was there as well. And so this is a real event. 22,000 fans watched this event. It was a computer football game. That's all that was. Some guys played football against each other online, you know, on one of these Madden type of NFL, you know, college football games. And they used old Nebraska players to do it. And they got 22,000 fans watching. Now, seriously, I want your honest opinion. How pathetic is that?
I mean, we're scraping the bottom here. I mean, we really, people are stir crazy and desperate. So it doesn't really surprise me. You know, it really does. I've been spending, I shouldn't even say this, but I've been spending like a not insignificant amount of time playing Minesweeper with my son.
Okay.
Like Minesweeper, like the old Windows 95.
Right.
You can get it
online. That's old school.
Yeah, it's really old school. So you can Google these old games, like the old Super Mario Brothers, and I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, I can now play this with my kids. And it's like, all of a sudden you look up and it's like 90 minutes later and you're like, ooh,
Mackenzie,
maybe I should be doing something else.
Mackenzie, you have motivated me. I am going to play Minesweeper now this week. I'm going to let you know next week how that – I love the game. I have not played it for years, but thank you for that jog down.
It'll come right back to you.
Oh, man. I've got to relive my strategies. But nonetheless, I found myself getting excited during this game. I was texting my buddies. Hey, look. Only 2 minutes left. We're only down by 14. I think we can do this. We tied it up and went to overtime, and I was screaming out loud. And so, yeah, I'm just going to leave that there. We really are in need of our sports. Have you thought about what's going to happen next year if we don't have our football?
I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in my household specifically. Like, I don't know what will, I mean, listen, you're asking me from a wife's perspective, and you know,
right.
From a wife's perspective, like in the back of my mind, like my deepest, darkest secrets, like I'm like, yay, I'll have my Sundays back. But you know, also, you know, I am a fan too, so
good.
Huge loss.
So, do you have this sign that says, "We interrupt this marriage to bring you the football season"? My wife used to have that.
Yes,
football fans.
We could use that. Exactly. And that, you know, it's only 16 weeks or 17 weeks. Like 17 weeks is a long time. You know?
It is. It is a long time. I don't care if there are no fans. just let us have our football back. I'm hoping, I'll just tell you, my hope is that we get to the point by next fall where there is enough testing around that all of the NFL players can test themselves and make sure they're healthy, and then they can play without fans, and I would be total in support of that. But of course, there's going to have to be enough tests around for that to even be acceptable, but from the public's perspective, but please give us a football. All right, well, that gives us a great segue into, let's debrief what happened in the world of law this last week before we get to our movie, Liar, Liar. First thought I want to throw by you is in recent podcasts, you and I have talked about, we've kind of surmised, what might be litigation, what might litigation look like when it comes to the coronavirus? And you can go back and re-listen to those previous episodes. I think we nailed it. And so one of the big lawsuits trends that we saw this last week were these lawsuits against states, against governors, against governmental entities that are requiring people to be locked down and not go to certain businesses. We're starting to see a lot of these lawsuits come out. You know, churches are filing lawsuits against the governor. I think one was filed here in Kansas against the governor of Kansas because of her shutdown order. And these cases are going to be decided based upon the exceptions. And so, for example, when the governor of Kansas decided to shut down churches, essentially what they were saying is churches are not essential, and so you've got to be shut down. Okay, at a surface level, that might be okay, but then the issue then becomes, well, what services did you allow? And so have you seen these cases, you follow these cases where governors are being sued under these shutdown orders?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many of them out there. It's like hard to even keep track exactly what's going on. But I think, you know, churches, that has issues all over it, right? I mean, you got assembly, you've got religion, you've got speech. There's so many rights, exercises of rights that go on in a church.
Pick like, which you, right you want to pick. Whole, it's going to be there.
Exactly. So, but yeah, some of the stuff that the governors are allowing is, you know, I mean, there's what they call the straight face argument. Like, you have to be able to say it in front of a judge with a straight face. And some of them, you know, I don't know if they can do that. So
listeners, this is how it would play out in a court proceeding. And so let's say the governor shut down church services in Kansas. And this has happened all over the United States, but I'm just going to talk about the one here in Kansas. All right, so they're going to go to court, and so the governor's going to say, look, this was necessary. We had to do this to protect the public. All right, we accept that, governor. Now let's push back just a little bit. Have you created exceptions? Do you allow other groups that are similar, to meet? So here's what I'm wondering about. They say, well, churches, people sit in front of each other. Well, what if they don't have to sit in front of each other? What if they're like, you put a row in between them? Have you been to the grocery store? People are all over the grocery stores. Then it dawned on me yesterday, what about flying in an airplane? Are people still flying today? And people sit right behind you in that plane? So why is it that you can sit in an airplane right in front of someone who might be coughing and hacking on you, but you can't be in a church service? So those are going to be the tough issues that these governmental entities are going to have to address in order to win these lawsuits. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, lobbyists? I guess that's why you can sit in an airplane and not in church. Right, like, okay. That would be my answer to that question. I don't think that's like a sound legal argument, though. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be an issue. My question would just be like, how soon are the courts going to hear these cases and how fast are they going to act? Because there's obviously like a mootness issue. Like, if you get to court and like everything's over and everything's back to normal, then you have to show, you know, that you were damaged. And I guess it's not like so hard, but that you have standing, which might be an issue. So, you know, we'll just have to see like how quickly courts working remotely
right
can act on these cases.
So what happened here in Kansas was the governor issued this order, and then the Kansas legislature responded to that order by trying to rescind it. The legislature tried to rescind the governor's order, a really unique thing for a legislature to do. That went to the Kansas Supreme Court. The Kansas Supreme Court, on a technicality, sided on behalf of the governor. So a federal lawsuit gets filed, and the federal judge this last week said, no, you, governor, you can't do that. You've overstepped your bounds. You don't have a valid basis because you've allowed all of these exceptions. And so, again, why is it that you won't allow the people in church to meet even if they follow proper social distancing rules? All right, well, let's transition to the Supreme Court. There were three big cases that came out of the Supreme Court this last week. The first case I want to talk about is Barton v. Barr. Did you hear about this case?
I did. Immigration case, right?
This is the case about that exemplifies this old adage that the Supreme Court operates with this thought of any stick to beat a dog. In other words, they have a result they want to reach, and they don't care what stick it takes to beat that dog. Any stick will do. And so here, the issue here is immigration. I mean, that's the bottom line. You're right. It's who has control over immigration? What direction do we want to go with our immigration policy? Here, there was a person whose name was Andre Barton, and he was in the United States lawfully on a visa, and he was basically a lawful permanent resident. He committed some criminal acts, and so a motion was filed to remove him from the United States. Now, there is a law out there that allows a judge to step in and intervene and say, look, we're not going to remove this person, because we just don't think it's right to do that. And so in a 5-4 decision in this case, the Supreme Court ruled that in this guy's particular situation, he does not get the benefit of this law. A judge cannot intervene and keep him from removal because he committed another criminal act within the 7-year period of time that he had to be criminal act free. Any thoughts on Barton v. Barr?
So, I mean, I think it was exactly. It's a fairly straightforward issue about whether the 7-year crime, I guess, has to be a removable offense, and the court said it does not have to in itself be a removable offense in order to kind of prevent the immigration judge from stopping the removal proceedings for the removable offense, if that makes sense. So yeah, it wasn't like a huge surprise that the case came out the way it did. What I want to know is, are the justices working from home? And if they are they wearing sweatsuits like the rest of us? Like, do they have like messy hair and a glass or a mug of coffee on their desk, and they're just like, ugh, you know, sitting there in their slippers working from home? Like, how different is it? Because the end result, the products, the opinions that are being written, you know, just as eloquent as usual. So they seem to be doing something right. And I want to know what they're doing to make
you
that
just
work.
You just put an image into my mind that I wish were not there. I am picking these 9 Supreme Court justices all in their pajamas, their PJs, whatever, on Zoom, talking with one another. I mean, we've all
Are they doing Zoom conferences? Like, is this how this is going?
Well, you know they can't be meeting in person. I mean, these are the highest risk group out there. They're not exactly young spring chickens, right?
Like RBG could beat this thing, but let's not test that, okay?
She's beaten everything else. And so, yeah. Pre-existing conditions, whatever, I'll take you on. I get that, but still, yeah, this is a somewhat high-risk group, so you know they're not meeting. Are they actually doing this Zoom with video running, or is it just audio?
And if they are doing Zoom, is it just Clarence Thomas sitting in the top right-hand corner silently? Like, I just need to know what these Zoom meetings look like.
Oh, excellent point. You have to have video, or else how would you know that Clarence was even there?
Exactly. I just imagine, like, the intro to the Brady Bunch, like, them looking down and looking up at each other on the Zoom call. Like, it's got to be fantastic.
Oh, that is much watch TV. I love that. That is, so the reason why I mentioned any stick to beat a dog on this case, the holding should not surprise anyone. Let me just give you the relevant facts. A person who is not a citizen goes to court and says, I don't want to be removed from this country. That's pretty much all you need to know. So along ideological lines of 5-4, the court ruled, nope, you're out of this country. You committed a crime. In fact, you commit so many crimes. We don't want you in here, and we're just not going to stand up on your behalf at this point in time. And so he lost his case. I almost think that that's all you need to know in this case. It was resolved along ideological lines. How about Ramos v. Louisiana? That's a fascinating case, I think. Could be the making of a movie sometime soon. I know you read this opinion in its entirety, so you must really be bored. But Mackenzie, what is Ramos v. Louisiana about?
Okay, so this case is about the Sixth Amendment right to a unanimous jury verdict in criminal cases. And apparently up until, you know, very recently, there were two states, Louisiana and Oregon, in which, you know, state law did not require a unanimous jury verdict. Now, it's been the law.
Now, listeners, that might surprise you because it surprised me. Did you realize that you did not need a unanimous jury verdict in all states on a criminal matter? I mean, you just kind of assumed that's the case. It has to be unanimous. No, apparently not. And Louisiana was one of these states that did not have a unanimous jury verdict requirement. What was the other state?
Oregon.
Okay, or Louisiana and Oregon.
Right, exactly. And it, you know, there was kind of, it was surprising to me too. Like I thought that was kind of a given. I really kind of thought that all of the Bill of Rights had been incorporated to this, applied to the states. And I knew there were some like obscure outliers, but this is like a fundamental criminal procedure issue. So it did surprise me. And as it turns out, it was like super racist, like why the laws were put in place. Like none of the justices doubted that. Like that's kind of generally accepted.
Now I want to get there in just a bit. But first of all, it surprised me. Like you said, I thought that the unanimous jury verdict requirement was in the Constitution. It's not, is it?
Right. No, it's not. It says an impartial jury, right? So there's a bunch of jurisprudence about what that means and what context. So it's not, those words like aren't written in the Sixth Amendment. Correct.
If you were to look up the Constitution, Google it today, like the Founding Fathers did, Google it, you will not see in criminal trials, you have to have a unanimous verdict. It just simply says a fair and impartial jury. So you're going, before I so rudely interrupted you, why did this come into our laws? Why did this non-unanimous requirement even come into the Louisiana law?
Basically to disenfranchise Black people and make their votes not count.
So it had a racist background.
Yeah, totally. Like, there's no other, I don't even think there was any other proffered reason. Like, it was just like, nope, that was racist. You know, it seemed pretty cut and dry. So it is surprising when you look at the opinion that, or the opinions in this case, that there are A, so many of them, and then B, the makeup of the opinions. I mean, you have Neil Gorsuch and Ruth Bader Ginsburg teaming up with Breyer and kind of Sotomayor, and then you have Alito and Kagan teaming up. I mean, it's just all over the place.
Right. So listeners, let me just kind of tell you what she just said, because you might not realize this. But the court will write one opinion. I mean, you'll have one justice who will be assigned to write the opinion, and they pretty much will write that opinion. Now, that is pretty easy when you got all justices that agree 100% with what that person writes. So, we got five justices who say, I like that opinion, we're good with it, four are on the other side. That makes it clean and very crisp and easy to understand. The problem is when you get certain grouping of justices that like parts of your opinion, but not other parts of your opinion. And so you got to say, well, subsection A1, we got six justices on that, but on the subsection B, now only four justices were signed up on that. So it becomes very difficult in reading these fractured opinions to find out, well, which justices actually signed on for that particular section. So you're saying this is one of those cases where it's very difficult to understand what the case was, how it was decided.
Right, exactly. And it's going to be one of those things that causes, you know, consternation for, I mean, I don't think there are going to be a lot of lower court cases that have to be decided under this. Like, the result is pretty clear. Like, you got to have a unanimous jury verdict. The Constitution requires it. Like, the outcome is clear. And in any event, at least Louisiana had already changed its law. So, you know, there will be some appeals that now take place. But moving forward, you know, it's pretty clear. However, you know, the reasoning behind why that should be the law, or even whether the prior case that kind of may have said you don't need a unanimous jury verdict in state courts, called Apodaca versus Oregon, which was a 1972 case, the justices couldn't even agree on whether that case was precedential. So there's a lot of confusion and a lot of different opinions, and there's been a lot of ink already spilled about this case. But yeah, it's a hot mess. It's a mess.
You mentioned Apodaca, which I can't even say that word. Apodaca, let's call it that. That was a precedent on this issue of whether or not you need a unanimous jury verdict. And a lot of legal experts are focusing on how the court dealt with overruling that precedent. Whenever the court today overturns precedent, that gets everyone up on nerves, because they're wondering, well, what other precedents are going to be subject to the court's overruling? And of course, everyone is looking ahead to Roe v. Wade. And so that is probably one of the biggest issues from this decision, is how will the court then deal with future cases when it comes to overturning a precedent? All right, well, one last case, which really wasn't that interesting, was the Romag Fasteners v. Fossil Inc. I said it wasn't that interesting. I'm sure the lawyers who argued this and their mothers love this case dearly, but this case, the court just held unanimously that a plaintiff in a trademark suit can get an award of damages for lost profits without showing that the wrongdoers acted willfully. And so, do you have any take on this case? Or do you agree with me it's boring, or any final thoughts?
I mean, I don't even know the difference between a trademark, copyright, you know, patent. I mean, I guess I know the patent, but like, you know, you lost me a trademark. I'm really just, now I'm thinking, you know, are they working from home? I'm back there. So yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure it matters to the people who have awards of damages entered against them when they had no mens rea and didn't know they were infringing a trademark. That's who it's going to matter to. That won't be me, knock on wood. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, there you go. It was a very interesting week at the Supreme Court. One last thought on the Supreme Court. In a couple of weeks here, I believe the first week of May, they're going to start live streaming the audio portion of their proceedings. And so, yes, the Supreme Court will be entering the 21st century finally, but no Zooming going on here. You will not be able to see them in their skivvies. They made very clear that we're talking about audio only and no video will be allowed. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a complete and utter mess. Our marketing team, Redbird Solutions, and Leanne Holmberg for spreading the good word about us, and Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. Oh, and I should not forget Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.